This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Higher Choices Compass, Exploring Your God Capacity as the Path to Your Destination. And the author is Laura Zuber. And Laura joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Crossbooks. Hello, Laura.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you with us. This is going to be a great discussion. We're going to learn how to get to our destination. Some of us don't even know where that is, but you're going to help point it out to us, especially with the help of God in our lives. Let me read what you have written about your book. The Higher Choices Compass is a self-discovery program that promotes biblical principles and uses practical, real-world methods and examples. Readers will discover gifts and talents, passion, define goals, and craft a vision statement and learn how to overcome obstacles and follow God's leading, his leading voice. Well, that sounds like right on target, and especially those of us who value and espouse God in our lives. Seems like everybody ought to do that, though, shouldn't they?
Well, I would hope so, but, you know, in different folks in different ways.
Yeah.
But something to be discovered, certainly at a personal level.
So, Laura, tell us about yourself and what motivated you to publish this book.
Grew up in Texas and Oklahoma, and I'm 50 right now. Actually, I just turned 51, and so I have three grown children who are almost grown. They're all in college right now. I guess that's close enough to being grown. But, you know, I've always worked in the corporate world. I work in software development, and several years ago, while I was working and my three young children were in grade school, I just discovered that, you know, I was really busy and God didn't give me those three kids to leave them at daycare all day. You know, I just thought I should spend more time with them. So long story short, my whole path began when I met the author Lori Beth Jones, only through reading her book, Jesus CEO. And as someone who was trying to manage a software development group, I felt that personnel issues were something I needed help with. But her second book is really what inspired me and got me on this path. And it was called The Path, Creating a Mission Statement for Work and for Life. So I took that, went through that book with a group of women at church, and at the same time did spiritual gifts class, and discovered that actually my purpose is to help people, help other people find their purpose. So I quit my full-time job. Actually, I first stepped the hours back so that I could, you know, slowly move into a new field, and became a life coach. And so this book, The Higher Choices Compass, is my coaching curriculum, laid out in a calendar, sort of a format. It's a journey of self-discovery and spiritual transformation.
And you focus on this paradox, as you call it. There's the paradox of God's will, but also we have free choice.
It's very hard to understand sometimes. I think it's something people have to grapple with. But if you look around and just observe, you'll see that it's true. People who know God and have been in prayer and done what they can to get to know God, in my opinion, you either believe that God is sovereign or he's not. If God is less than sovereign, then he's really not God. So within this, if you accept the fact that God is sovereign, but you know that we all have choices to make every day, little ones and small ones, then somehow both of those phenomenon or realities have to coexist. And we as humans can't fully understand it. We can't fully explain it. So we need to accept the paradox that they both exist. So higher choices then are recognizing first, being aware that we make hundreds of choices every single day, and every one of them counts. the life that we're building is built based upon the choices that we make. Even something as important as, you know, fitness is in the world news today. What we choose to eat, whether or not we choose to exercise, those make us responsible for our own life. So I just want people to consider, before they make a choice, however large it is, to stop and consider what choice would God have them make to be the best person that they are supposed to be. Each individual's will, each individual's purpose is different, and so the higher choices for me are not the same as the higher choices for you necessarily. It's an individual calling.
But we are all responsible. We're responsible.
We are. We are responsible for our own lives. Now, you can say, you might come up first with the example of, you know, well, things happen to me that are certainly outside of my control, and that's true. But what we do control is our reaction to those things.
So in these crazy times, these very tough economic times, as you put it, the best insurance is to know where you can be of service and also find joy. So this is part of this. I mean, there's this theme in the book, even though this is more of a, you call it a guidebook, but the underlying theme is really, we got to get way outside of our own selves.
Well, I wouldn't say outside of yourself. It's really becoming more deep within yourself. We would all, to create your best life, you would want to discover what makes you happy. And what I found through the discovery of spiritual gifts is that I really believe that God has created each one of us uniquely to be of value in this world in the particular time that we're here. So that I've been equipped with certain gifts that benefit others. But the really cool thing is that those gifts are what bring me joy. So it will be a natural thing for me to want to exercise the gifts that I have. For example, I know that I have the spiritual gift of knowledge. Being on purpose and being on mission, so to speak, is about process. It's about enjoying doing the things that you do all day long. You're a radio host. You must love having conversations with people and sharing information with other people. It's actually sitting down and planning a radio show and talking to people that you enjoy. So for me, one of the gifts that I have, the knowledge gift, I enjoy doing the research, searching through the Bible for passages and topics, and then putting that together in a way that I can share with other people.
So it's this process, as you talk about, this co-creation. It's putting ourselves through our freedom of choice, through our free will, to find out God's will for us and then, you know, take action.
Taking action is a big part of it. The book itself, if you walk through, there are 12. It's funny, I didn't really intend to write a book. I don't know how many, I don't know what percentage of authors actually sit down and intend to write a book. Maybe you would know that number. But what I had really wanted to do was, I've been a day planner geek, I guess, for a very long time. I've used all kinds. And so what I had wanted to do was to create a day planner that was spiritual based. Instead of having leadership quotes that you would find in the business store, I wanted scripture, I wanted a weekly devotional, and I wanted to insert my coaching curriculum. And so I piloted that product. As a life coach, I also knew that I needed a product, and it was too complex and too big. So I decided that the three main aspects of my original idea for the Higher Choices Compass needed to be split out into three different products. So the book is just the coaching curriculum by itself. I have plans to produce a prayer journal, which would be the weekly meditations later on, and then just the calendar with scripture later on. So the book, then, it starts with, like you said, talking about the paradox. What are higher choices? They are defined. What is God's will? So I have a few pages on helping people understand that. And then the next few sections actually lead my readers through discovering what their spiritual gifts are. What are their values? The choices that we make are based upon our values, whether consciously or unconsciously. So you must spend some time, again, discovering yourself and what is it that you truly value so that your choices are consistent with those. But after that, once someone has, you know, gone through the curriculum, at least the first part, and defined a mission statement and a vision statement, and those are two different things. I'll be glad to explain if you're interested. But after that, then the tools in my book help people to live that life. Now that you've got a mission statement, well, so what? What are you going to do about it? Well, you need to have a goal. You need to understand what the resources you're going to need to accomplish those goals. We all get off track, right? Things happen in life. How do you get back on track? That's the chapter I call navigation. And then the last chapter in the book, and a couple other what I would call supporting chapters, help people remember what it's all about, in that just fulfilling your purpose, you serve others. But when your life is over, what are you going to remember? You're going to remember the relationships and the people in your life. So the last orientation in the book is just to remember that we need to make higher choices to build the best relationships, because that's really where our quality of life is going to come from.
You say it's designed to be read throughout the calendar year.
Yes, and that comes from that notion of the original idea being a day planner. So what I've done is I've created 12 what I call orientations. And an orientation is, you know, if you actually use a compass out in the field, it helps you orient to where your next objective is. So in my book, I've made the analogy that an orientation is an idea that I would like someone to consider adopting as a way to move their life forward. And then within each orientation, so there's 12 orientations on the compass. Within each orientation, then there's a weekly turning point. Again, an idea that I would like someone to consider. So, for example, one of the orientations, one of the most unique aspects of my book, is what I call Ask, Seek, Knock. This is the process for discerning God's will. How would you even go about knowing what God's will is for your life? Well, Jesus told us to ask. And I think it's interesting that if you separate out each letter, A-S-K, it does stand for ask, seek, and knock. So those are the first three turning points within the ask orientation. And the last one is to abide. Once we find God's will by asking, seeking, and knocking simply just means to be persistent, then we need to just stay with that and abide with Christ and let Him keep us in this new position, I guess, a new way of living that perhaps we weren't doing before.
What if you think you're doing God's will, but then you discover that things didn't work out and you were wrong?
Well, how would you even know that you were wrong? It's not a matter of right or wrong necessarily. I think it's more a matter of how peaceful and joyful do you feel with your life and your relationship with God. That's really the true measure. No one can tell you what's right or wrong, except maybe you and God. And, you know, God opens doors and God closes doors, and I think that would, and God is certainly loving. So I don't think wrong would be a very good description. It would just be maybe we can move on to something better and reach a higher plane.
And one of the basic principles to always remember, and of course you have talked about it throughout this discussion, but we are never alone. That's something we have to hold on to.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the main things is how do you come to know God's will? And my first answer is by knowing God. It's the relationship. It's just as the relationships with people in our lives are one of the most important things, then the quality of our relationship with God is really what the Higher Choices Compass is all about, because it's, again, it's the process, right? Process is important. The end results are up to God. One of the sections on progress, the orientation on progress, two of the turning points in that are perfect results and perfect timing. And so that both of those support the notion that if I, on a daily basis, seek God's guidance and say, you know, how can I be on mission today and trust that He will show me, then all I'm responsible for is doing what I'm called to do. What will happen, the results are in His hands, and the timing for that are in His hands. As an example, I started this project and had the initial idea for the Higher Choices Compass in 2004. And here we are, it's 2012, getting close to 2013, and I've just finished it. And I had no idea that it would take that long. But the whole process has just been, it's been a wonderful process. And I can see now, looking back, that the delay was important, because there are certain things that I had to learn and certain things that I had to go through before I could complete it.
We've been listening to author and life coach Laura Zuber. Her book, The Higher Choices Compass, Exploring Your God Capacity as the Path to Your Destination. Laura, tell us how to get your book.
You can get the book from my website. If you order it from me, it's www.higherchoices.net. Then I will send you a personal signed copy. If you would just like to order yours from Amazon.com or from BarnesandNoble.com, you can do that. And it's also available in hard copy, soft copy, and an ebook.
Thank you so much, Laura, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Crossbooks.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Be by Design, How I Be is Up to Me. And the author is Christine McKee, and Christine joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Christine.
Hey, Steve, how are you going?
Well, I love the little rhyme there, and it really sums it up. How I be is up to me. That kind of really says what your book is about, but let me read a couple more things. You say that your book is born from the philosophy that accountability for transformation starts with you. All tools and strategies included are designed to heighten your individual awareness of choices and their consequences on the entire system of life. The self, friends, family, work, colleagues, businesses, community, country, and even the whole planet. Let's not leave out the whole planet. And this book offers a process that can be applied across the whole of your life. It's great to have someone to give us some tools and strategies. Before we get into that, let's find out about you, Christine. Tell us about yourself and why you decided to write this book.
Excellent. I love that question, because what the book is actually about is breaking free of all those roles that we think we are, and all of the habitual responses to, well, who am I? So I think it's kind of a funny question to ask, because the conditioned answer would be 40-year-old fabulous woman who's enjoying life over here in Brisbane, Australia, who grew up in a really lovely environment in a beach town called the Gold Coast in Australia with hardworking and well-meaning parents. And I got the opportunity to travel a lot and do a lot of exploration of the world in my younger years. And I moved into psychology when I was in my late 20s and started to really wake up, I think, to why did I make all the choices I'd made up to that age in my life? I'd been married, that didn't work. What were the reasons for that? What was the modelling and the conditioning that I'd followed? And then all of a sudden I started to gravitate, when I got into my early 30s, to a lot of the Eastern philosophy. It really, my heart just warmed to it, and I felt really drawn to seeing things in a different perspective, maybe stepping back a little bit from conditioning and values and morals and attitudes that had been handed down. And I started to become this seeker of more than who I thought I was. So I think this book definitely came out of my curiosity for who I was. And when my parents divorced when I was in my late teens, it really made me stand back and question, geez, I wonder why they chose each other, and I wonder why they stayed in that relationship. And that really opened my eyes to some of the choices that we make. And I realized that I was becoming, as a mature adult, a person who I guess was a little subjected to my own upbringing. And I thought, I need to step away from that and see what else I can be. And that's where I started peeling all the layers back. And as a psychologist, I started working with amazing clients, and they too were coming from a place where they felt a little stuck by their past, by their upbringing. And then all of a sudden the book started to flow out of me, because I went, hang on, we seem to all be in a little bit in the same position here. What a great gift to maybe be able to share some tools where we feel safe and confident in ourselves, that we can step outside of what the world thinks we should be and come from our heart a little more.
So you ask a couple questions. Are you where you want to be, and do you know how to get there? And that's what's critical with your book, because you give us tools, tips, and strategies to change our life.
Right.
Well, let's talk about some of that. Your book is broken down into four sections. And let's start with a little bit about, or four phases, as you say. Let's start with awareness.
Yeah. So we look at four phases that, while in the book I've broken them down as separately, but the reality is we'll float and move through all four simultaneously in life. We're not stuck in a process here. But awareness is really about saying, well, if we can have a little more understanding about the choices that we might have made up till right now in this moment, we're then free to be able to say, well, does it work for me and does it not? Does it serve me? Does it serve other people? And with that inner awareness, we can then make different choices. So awareness is all about saying, well, from the brain perspective, we shortcut life a fair bit. We're chasing some habits and some autopilot. And when you can start to understand that at the brain level, we will want to be a little bit more, I guess the best word is, fast in the choices that we make based on our history. And that's where what I call the manual of life comes in, where we look at all of that conditioning that we were handed down conveniently in a little invisible book called Your Manual of Life, where you get all your values, your attitudes, what makes you a good person, a bad person, here's what you should be doing or shouldn't be doing. The brain absorbs all of that when we're so young, up to the age of about 7, that we get a little bit predefined at that age. And becoming aware of what sits inside that manual of life and looking at some of the habits that we might have that maybe don't get us the best results, it allows us then to be able to move forward and make those different choices and be much more accountable for the way we choose to speak and intend and think and just act on this planet. So that's what awareness is really about, raising. Do you even know why you do what you do?
And perhaps why you've been chosen to be who you are.
Absolutely. I think sometimes in that first early upbringing, those early years of conditioning, we probably don't have so much choice as a young child because we're so influenced by our key influences in life, whether they be your parents or your grandparents, aunties, uncles, TV, media in this day and age, all that social media stuff as well. So I think maybe in that young years, choice is less conscious because our minds aren't mature enough to discern between what's going to get us great results in life and what's not. But certainly as an adult, we can move beyond that and make all of the choices that we want.
Phase 2 is focus.
Yeah, focus is my favorite part. Once you're going to know a little bit more about why you're doing what you're doing, you can then intend anything else that you want. You can pick and choose. You can say, well, that aspect of who I choose to be is awesome and I want to keep doing that. But, you know, there might be certain sections. It might be how you speak to certain people or the types of relationships you might be attracting into your life. You might want to intend something different for yourself where it's more generous in terms of love, or you may want to impact the wider community more with some of the behaviours that you choose to bring into your life. So you can intend what you want. You can use your personal power. So you can really step in and say, well, I can control these aspects, which is myself, but what I choose to do with myself is going to influence everybody else that I come into contact with. So best I choose wisely with that so that I can leave a positive feel or a loving feel with people. And really looking in the focus phase about how you can get the most out of your life on a moment-by-moment basis. So I don't know, we might do 100 to 200 tasks a day. Do you really think about those tasks to get the best results in everything that you do? So that's what focus is all about, giving the tools of how to have rich experiences every moment.
How do we control our moods?
How do you control your moods? That's fantastic. That is very much a chemical and an electrical component that happens in the brain, and it's all led by your thought. So mood control is very much about saying, what am I thinking about? Because whatever that is, I'm going to get a chemical dump from my brain to my body that matches the thought process. So let's say you wake up in the morning and say, this is going to be an absolutely awesome and fun-filled day. You've almost got like a little, your very own personal chemical cocktail maker in your brain that says, oh, awesome and fun and all of those things. You'll get a, from your inner pharmacy, you'll get a chemical dump from your brain to your body where you'll start responding to that chemicals in a way that is fun and vibrant. But if you wake up in the morning and say, hey, it's going to be another, you know, depressing day, I'd hate my job and I don't want to go there and all of those things, your chemical cocktail bartender in your brain will respond to that as well and give you chemicals that actually lower your level of ability to want to get movement going on and to actually feel good. So you're in control of it precisely by your thought processes, because your thoughts will then lead to a chemical reaction.
Phase 3 you call maximizing potential.
Yeah, maximizing potential is all about breaking free from any patterns, whether that be in communication, your thought processes, how you interact with other people in relationships, how to actually break free from anything that doesn't get you great results and move into strong, loving communication. So maximizing potential is about, in every human interaction, we can learn something about ourselves. If you react to somebody in a positive or a negative way, that's an opportunity to say, I wonder why it is that I've responded that way. I wonder if potentially I might be capable of that kind of behavior too. So we can move into a space where we don't judge ourselves for our choices and we stop judging other people. We can be very compassionate in how we deal with all other humans on the planet. And then I share some tools in there that are around communicating in the moment. How do you ask for what you really, really desire in a way that's respectful to yourself, to the other person, where you're leaving a really positive ripple effect on everybody, but you're really honouring what it is that you need to say? So maximising potential is really about truthful communication from the heart, where you respect yourself and other people to maximise the chance of actually getting what you want. So there's no manipulation in this kind of communication. It's very loving and heartfelt, and it's a very easy four-step communication tool that's easy to apply in all communications that you'll have, whether that be at work or at home or with family and friends. There's no boundaries on that at all.
And the final phase, phase four, choices.
Choices is all about saying, well, you've got some awareness about why you've chosen to be who you are up till this moment. You're able to focus your attention on creating more of what you want. You can communicate really well and maximise the interactions you have. And choices is really a reminder about saying, well, from this moment forward, what are you going to choose? And there's some strong tools in the choices phase around really focusing on your mental diet. And by your mental diet, how do you talk to yourself? Are you loving and respectful? Do you encourage yourself? What choices do you want to make about how you even see who you are? And then choices about how you're going to define other people. Are you going to judge them, or are you going to be compassionate toward them? And choices is very much about saying, find joy and gratitude in everything. There's a blessing in every situation, even if it does hurt in the moment or it's fabulous in the moment. They're all life-enriching experiences, and it's about how do you choose to perceive those events. And so it's really a reminder about every moment you've got a choice. The more that you focus on what you want, the more you'll become everything that you're capable of being. So it's really a reminder to choose wisely in every moment.
And to choose the power of gratitude.
Absolutely. The gifts that come in, even in some of the what appears on the surface to be an uncomfortable experience, we contribute something to that ourselves. So it's always a wonderful learning opportunity to say, well, hang on, I might not feel great in that experience. Why is that? What am I perceiving here? Have I brought any history or toxic thoughts into this? Or am I coming from a loving space? So we can always find gratitude in everything, because I think gratitude breeds gratitude. If you find a blessing in something, you'll see more beautiful things in everything that's going on. And that can become a little contagious as well with everybody else. And that's that ripple effect, that influence that you can create to that wider community, which is really what Be By Design is all about. Have a wonderful influence on everyone you come into contact with.
There are many, many, untold many self-development books. Why do you think people should read Be By Design over the others?
Yeah. The reason I wrote Be By Design was around, I've read many, many self-development books across time, and I've really have always been drawn to them. And sometimes I walk away feeling, I don't know how to make this sustainable in my life. I don't know how to really do this on my own. So my intention with Be By Design was to make it jargon-free, full, chock-a-block full of tools and strategies at the end of each chapter, so that there's lots of practice opportunity. People aren't left wondering how they're going to apply this. It's very clear. It's very written in a very conversational style, and it blends science and spirituality together. So it gives it a credibility focus and a lot of psychological concepts, but people are able to do it without a third party, without a professional with them. I give them the content base, examples of how to do it, and then clear tasks at the end of each chapter on implementing it however they might want to into their life. So it's very, very walk through at your own pace. It's for the person to become empowered, to know that they can do this on their own. They don't need to rely on somebody else to become everything they're capable of being. So I've broken it down so that it's extremely user-friendly.
And this is a rich investment into ourselves. And as you point out, the rewards are unlimited.
Absolutely. In terms of empowering, I find it, certainly with clients and with myself and people that I associate with, the more that we can see the strengths that we have within ourselves and place no limits on our capability and see that getting outside of the comfort zone is actually the most wonderful thing we can ever do, and have some tools and the how to do that on a daily basis, people can just thrive and they truly can become everything that they want to be. And that's such a wonderfully rich experience to build your self-esteem and your self-awareness and your own level of self-worth. No one else can ever do that for you. It's got to be an inside job. And for me, that's where happiness comes from.
We've been listening to Christine McKee. She is the author of her book, Be by Design, How I Be is Up to Me. Christine, tell us how to get your book.
There's many places. Start on my website, which is www.beinstitute.com.au. That links into the book, plus also all of the other things that we do at Be Institute with Be by Design. Also available at Balboa Press, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also on my blogging site, which is bebydesign.net.
Thank you so much, Christine, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thanks, Steve. Fantastic.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Loprete. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprete, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, O Honored Father, Theater of the Voyage of Holy Abbot Brendan. And the author is Sharon Pelfrey. And Presbytera joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbo Press. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Steve. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, this is an epic, and many of us have, of course, heard about the Odyssey, and this epic goes back to ancient times, and you're going to explain some of the travels of this abbot, the St. Brendan, the navigator, and it's done in a poem, and there's other commentary in your book. It's very unique, and it's inspirational, and we learn about the tales of this Brendan voyage, where they set out to sea in this very small boat, really, and they traveled for how many years?
They traveled for 7 years. The boat probably wasn't all that small. It could have been as long as the boats Columbus used.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right. They were trading vessels, so...
But it was made out of a very... It wasn't a wooden boat.
No, it was a leather boat.
A leather boat.
And if you want to see a very small one, you can go to the beginning of the second Lord of the Rings, where Frodo's sitting in a boat fishing. That is the boat technique, building techniques that they used, but they wouldn't have been in such a small one.
Well, before we get into more of the details of this poem and your commentary, let's find out a little bit about you and why you decided to write this book, and also about your name, Presbytera, as you were asked me to call you.
Right. My husband is a Greek Orthodox priest, and in our church, Priest Mary. We've been married for 45 years. He is called a presbyter. That's the biblical term. And because he's called a presbyter and we're married, I'm called Presbytera.
Very good. And what was the fascination, the motivation about this book? Why all the interest?
Well, my husband's bishop gave him the name Brendan. Priests have to take a saint's name. And when he got the name Brendan, I had never heard of St. Brendan. So I went along to learn about who it was. Meanwhile, all our Greek friends were kind of shocked and horrified because they, too, had never heard of St. Brendan, even though he is in the Greek Book of Saints. So I started out to write a small children's book just so families could know within the congregations where he served.
Now, this is the earliest account of a European voyage to the Western Hemisphere, the earliest discovery of America, which obviously most of us in America know, well, probably everyone doesn't know anything about this.
That is exactly right. And I will tell you, there are two books that really pioneered this for America, and they were published both in 1976. One was a voyage made in a curra, an Irish boat, to this hemisphere. That was made by Tim Severin, and I read that book. The other was written, there was a previous editor of the book, and World War II navigator collaborated. They wrote a sort of a navigational guide demonstrating where Brendan went, what currents, what speed it would have been. And they came to the conclusion that it read like a shipboard log. I was able to add some research to that. I was able to discover, for instance, that there's a kind of an odd passage about a jelly sea. But it turns out that it's a phenomenon that can be observed from outer space. It's called a spiral eddy, and what happens is some water will curve off of the Gulf Stream. It will create a kind of a jelly-like pool within this eddy, and it can be observed from outer space, and certainly Brendan's record here records that. So a lot of things that in the past that were considered strange about this text upon re-examination turned out to be very scientific.
What time period are we talking about?
He would have ended the voyage in 572. He would have begun it about 565.
And they were in search of what?
Honestly, they weren't in search of anything. They were in exile.
Mm.
There was some kind of scandal, and the poem doesn't tell us. Some of my other research indicates that probably in the school where Brendan was the abbot, a child may have died. Also, at the time, there was a battle which some Christians were involved in. That could have been a problem. But anyway, they went into exile.
So we're talking about a cruise during the mysterious Dark Ages.
Exactly.
Most of us really, we know the term, but we haven't got a clue of life during the Dark Ages.
That's why it's dark.
Very good. Yeah. Nobody can see it. No, but it was a very different time.
Mm-hmm.
And was St. Brendan, was he revered before the problems that came up?
Very much so. And actually, he was revered after, too. one of the beautiful things about the book is that it ends with his return to Ireland. And the comment the poet makes is that because God did not want those monks who had been so long heartsick at his absence to be deprived of one last glimpse of the father they loved. So that was it is a very beautiful ending to this whole little tale.
Now, you say this book is about a saint written by a saint.
Yes.
Give us those details.
Well, I will. This was very exciting to me, and I actually only really nailed this a year ago. St. Columba of Iona was a prince within the Irish community, very famous, kind of for his time like Mahatma Gandhi was 50 years ago. And he belonged to the rival house that Britain belonged to. So it's extremely interesting that he would wind up writing this. What I was able to nail is that within the poem that I've translated here, there are three passages that really so strongly resemble passages in other writing about Columba that I was able to chart that and to map his speech back and forth between the two texts. That's the part I will be reading to you when you get around to that.
Well, I think this would be a good time.
All right, I will do it. This is a kind of a fun part. As I think a lot of your people who are listening won't know, but it is important. This text influenced Dante Alighieri, the writer of the Divine Comedy. So we're in a passage where Brendan has entered the confines of hell, and this is a necessary part of an epic poem, and he's actually having a conversation with Judas, and what we're going to hear is some back and forth between Brendan and the demons, and this is actual preliterate spell casting. So I'll be reading that to you now. Twilight, by now, had settled on Tethys, that means on the ocean. And lo, behold, an innumerable demon horde swirled over Tethys' lovely face, hissing and whining, "Back off, man of God, because we're not to come to our comrade until you back away from him. We don't dare see our chief's face until we bring him his friend. Come on, give us our textbook on evil. Don't get the idea you could protect him in the dark." The man of God spoke in kind. "I don't protect Judas. Jesus Christ our Lord is the one who grants him a full night of grace through to sunrise tomorrow." There, now I'll stop there.
Very good. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Give us a real flavor of the way it's written.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's an epic, it's understandable. Often that can be very difficult to read.
I rather believe that probably children as young as 3 and 4, because that's about the ages that children entered Irish monastic schools, boys and girls. I believe that because it was theater, that children as young as that could participate and appreciate parts of the text. I think that it probably was used kind of vertically rather than horizontally, so children 10 and 12 could help their younger siblings and friends. And I think it was used interactively in that way and could be used that way again.
Now, this is put together, this tale about Brendan in 16. They're called mirroring episodes.
Ah, now, here we're going to get to the most exciting mathematical reality about this poem. There's long been speculation that the early Irish were Pythagorean. I have found many things to confirm that. And one of the interesting things is there's constantly pictures of cubes. They're cubic trees and cubic islands and cubic things. And the whole poem is organized in cubic structures. So it is four acts of four scenes each, for a total of 16 scenes.
And so, like, the first four focus on the seven-year Atlantic voyage, and then the next four, what do they do?
Well, actually, the first four focus on getting to the kind of central island that seemed to them like paradise. And for those who are thinking this all sounds like a storybook, this really goes to the geography of a Syrian saint who's very famous in the Eastern Church, whose name was Ephrem. So they reached this paradisical island in the first four. In the next four, they kind of travel the North Atlantic. In the third quadrant, they kind of travel the South Atlantic and get to the Barbados, get to the Western Hemisphere. And then in the fourth act, they do what they have to do in an epic poem. They enter into the other world, reach hell, and then come out of it and get back to Ireland.
Now tell us about your commentary.
Well, the commentary is really, I hope, very helpful to people to follow the period. It will shed immense light on the Dark Ages just because, you know, we have so few records, but this one is so wide-ranging. I have said elsewhere that it represents the church truly, truly spreading into the whole world as commanded. So we get pictures of what was going on in the Canary Islands, in the Azores, in the North Atlantic, up at the Faroe Islands, perhaps in the Shetlands and Orkneys. It's easier to pinpoint some bits than others. We get to the iceberg zone between Canada and Greenland. And so I have given a lot of details and also a lot of details of what was going on in North Africa and the Middle East, because those are very much part of the story.
And the big question seems like, how in the world in such a, it was a good sized boat, but still 18 guys lived alone together on the Atlantic for 7 years and they didn't turn on each other?
Yes. I think that the one thing we have to understand is that the announced theme of the book is the new commandment of love. That is, love one another as I have loved you. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, that you have love one for another. And so the fun thing about the book is it doesn't deny that there were tensions on the boat. And in scene 15, it points to the fact that at one point they were completely relieved and there were no tensions. So there were tensions on the boat, but larger issues kept them together. I think their common worship life probably was a very strong point of that, but also the external circumstances always seemed to draw them back together. But the main operative power is that Brendan remained a very humane teacher, a very patient teacher, and a very humorous fellow. So a lot of fun adventures, some things happened, and also God seems to bring them adventures each day, or as the text said, to reveal mysteries to them. So this is part of the intrigue, that they always have this expectation of God presenting mysteries that will lead them forward.
We've been listening to the author of her book, where it's titled, O Honored Father, Theater of the Voyage of Holy Abbot Brendan, and the author is Sharon Pelfrey. Tell us how to get your book.
Oh, you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can get it from me. You can get it from Westbow. Keep looking and you will find it.
Yes, yes. Well, it's fascinating, very different, an epic, and real insights into the Dark Ages and this very special band of men led by this Saint Brendan, and even the discovery of America. So thank you so much for being on Indie Book Publishing.
It's truly been my pleasure.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.